Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. Dave Edelstein is the mind behind Better Than Before, the website of mindful communication. He has had a varied career as soil scientist, environmental protection specialist, teacher, and community development worker. While in the Galapagos Islands, a surprise heart attack changed the course of his life. He now lives in Cuenca, Ecuador, with his wife, Yadira Brito. The turn to mindful communication came as Dave began to offer health and wellness coaching online. He learned that many people struggle to communicate with the most important people in their lives. This is because we focus too much on exchanging information when what we want is intimacy and openness. The primary goal of Dave's mindful communication is relationship building and true connection. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Hi, Leanne. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
Oh, let's.
Excellent. All right. So do you want to tell us a bit about what's happening for you right now?
What's happening for me right now? Well, you know, I'm into something I'm really quite excited about. In the course of developing my online business Better Than Before, as I was working the business and starting to reach out to people, I realized that many people had great difficulty communicating their real feelings to the people who matter to them most, that husbands and wives often have really unfortunate communication difficulties, parents and children, brothers and sisters, and of course, coworkers as well. And it struck me that I knew some tools and I had some skills that would help people learn how to do this better. And that this could really change people's lives, that this is a real pain point. We all suffer from loneliness. Nobody wants to be isolated. Everybody wants to connect. It's the most human thing in the world to want to connect to another human being. And we do this through communication. So in the course of developing my business, which had to do with wellness, connection, feelings, and communication and relationships are all critical parts of wellness. If we're going to feel well, we have to communicate. So I've developed what I call a mindful communication. This is not completely an invention of mine. I came up with it and found that other people had too. I reinvented the wheel. But this is what I'm offering to people, and it's a very exciting thing for me, because as I start to work with people on this, I really am finding that they feel better, that they feel more well, and that they see a path to greater happiness in their lives. This is the thing. So that's what I'm on now.
Wow, I love that. So what's your story? Where have you actually been to get up to this point?
I've been all over the place. I started out as in a very stable childhood, you know, living always very much in one place. And then, you know, over the course of my life, I've bounced around an awful lot. Where I am specifically right now is in the city of Cuenca, Ecuador. I came to Ecuador a little over 6 years ago. It's pushing 6.5 years ago. I hadn't intended to stay here forever, but now that looks pretty much like my path. I came here originally to teach English in a small village of 300 people. I worked in a school of 55 children teaching English. I just fit in. I was just happy to find myself here. Near the end of the 2-year contract, I met my wife. And she was from Cuenca. And I came out of the rural zone and moved to the big city. Cuenca is Ecuador's third largest city. People call it the Athens of Ecuador. It's the cultural city. It's the intellectual city. And people here have a reputation for singing when they speak, that there's something in the Cuenca accent that reminds people of singing. So it's a lovely place to live. It's beautiful. It's in the high Andes. I'm at an elevation of close to 3,000 meters, surrounded by the spectacular Andes Mountains, and I do my work from here. I do my work from home, and it's an inspiring place to be.
Certainly does, especially if it's such a cultural city and listening to their voices with their accents singing. I love that. That would be really cool to see.
Oh, it's marvelous! It's marvelous.
Yeah. So what do you think were the tipping points for change for you?
Well, in the last, surrounding my time in Ecuador, there have really been two. I hadn't expected two. I was happy to start with one. The first tipping point came at the end of 2009 as my son graduated from high school. My son is my younger child. And he went to a public university in the state of New York, and I realized that I had the savings to send him, that this wasn't going to be a financial problem, and that meant that really I was free to do whatever I liked with my life. That he was out of the house, and my daughter was already near to graduating from college, and Dad was free to do his thing. And my kids were very supportive. My kids were wonderful about this. They were like, Dad, yes, you have the spirit of adventure. This is, we've always admired this in you. You get out there and do something. So I resigned from my teaching job. I had been teaching science in high school in Great Neck, New York for 13 years. And I sacrificed the big pension that I would have gotten at 20 years or at 30. I wanted to get out and do these things while I was still young enough to do them. I was 52 years old. And the first thing that I did was go off to Stony Brook University to start a PhD program in what was a totally new program for the university. And I was in that for a year. Before everybody concluded that my goals for the program and what the program was evolving into were not really a great match. And that was fine with me. That was okay. And I started to really then look directly. I had gone to the PhD program with the hope of working in international development. I already had a master's degree in soil science. I have an Aggie background. I at an early stage in my career, I did soil conservation work, which is something that it's an issue that people don't think about much, an environmental issue that does resonate with me. But I hadn't done that for a long time. And I really wanted to try hard to get into the international development zone. So I went to a website called idealist.org and started looking around through Latin American countries. I speak Spanish. And I started looking around through countries, on the road to development. And here in Ecuador, there was a job teaching English to elementary school children in a very small village of 350 people, near a very famous Ecuadorian touristic landmark, the Nariz del Diablo, the Devil's Nose, which at the time that its railroad line was constructed was considered the most dangerous and difficult railroad construction in the world. The Nariz del Diablo is a small but very steep mountain, and what the engineers decided to do was run the train forward towards the station, zigzag it backwards at an angle down the mountain, and then with another switch, bring it forward into the station. So the train goes sliding forwards and backwards and then forwards again into the station in a zigzag down the mountain. I shouldn't make light of this. The many, many railroad workers died in the process of this construction. When I say dangerous and difficult, I am not exaggerating. This was a huge thing. And above this spectacular engineering work of the late 19th century is a little village called Tolte. And Tolte is a rural village. There was a time when the train was not just a touristic thing, but a real connection to Ecuador's coast. And the people of Tolte would bring their crops, things like potatoes and barley, down to the coast and pick up things like bananas and mangoes and bring them back. And this was an important economic lifeblood to the village. But as that ended, as the time for that faded, Tolte became a sleepy little mountain village where everybody pretty much continues to be a farmer. But they do have hopes for their children. And English is a requirement for high school. And there was no English teacher in this tiny little school. They didn't even have, they had a computer teacher who would visit once a week, but no English teacher. So there's a foundation, the Fundación Avanti of Quito, Ecuador, that gathered funds to provide an English teacher to the village. And I was what they provided. I had not taught English to small children. I'd just spent the previous summer teaching English to Chinese professionals at Stony Brook University. And I had taught Spanish to my high school students. But this was a new thing. And I got to Tolte and I found that my Spanish was a bit rusty and also a bit too Costa Rican for rural Ecuador. But they beat that out of me pretty quickly. For 3 months, I was up to speed. The children sort of ran all over me. I was a high school teacher. I wasn't used to managing little kids. And these are very healthy rural children who do a lot of field work. They don't sit in chairs real easily. They had me. But I kept at it. I persisted. And I developed a really effective English teaching method. As my students started to hit the high school and the regional high school, the teacher's like, holy smoke, where did you guys come from? I used a very live speaking and listening method, very practical. My students could speak English when I finished with them. And this was a great thing for the village, and I loved living there. I knew everybody by name. I was one of the few people in the village who knew every single person by name because, you know, generationally, you know, the old folks don't necessarily know the babies, you know, but I knew everybody. It was wonderful. One of the great takeaways from my time there was how important it is to say hello to your neighbors. The tradition in Ecuador is saludar, greet, you know, make sure that you greet. And everybody that I would see at any point in the day, you know, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, hello, nobody passed without saludo. I can't tell you what a profound positive effect this had on my mental and emotional health, just to feel recognized by my neighbors. In the United States, I don't know how it is in Australia, Leanne, mm-hmm. In the United States, people often don't even know their neighbors' names. They'll see them, you know, everybody gets in their car and takes off. Maybe you get a wave, you know, but saying hello to people on the street, whether you know them or not, is not done. And, you know, this again contributes to that loneliness, that failure to communicate, that isolation that really plagues modern life. After a couple of years, I met my wife. I moved to Cuenca. I did some work at the University of Cuenca, the state university, the public university. I taught some English. I taught a little biology. I taught a round of soil science. That was exciting. After a while, that seemed to run its course, and I sort of miraculously, again, idealist.org, what a great website, I got a job as a conservation coordinator in the Galapagos Islands. And my wife and I went to the Galapagos Islands. And there I saw for the first time in my life, live and in person, the giant Galapagos tortoise. And the five-year-old in me, who loved dinosaurs, just started to shake. Mm-hmm. First time I saw one of these 500-pound tortoises walking towards me, it was literally the thrill of a lifetime. It was really beyond my linguistic ability to describe. It was such an enormous thrill. It was like seeing something impossible. And my wife and I worked in the Galapagos Islands for a year. I had a desk at the Galapagos National Park, mostly working in environmental education programs and with the outreach people. I also had a little project helping people grow vegetable gardens. This is something important because practically all of the food has to be shipped into the islands. They're not self-sustaining for the population. So getting some fresh vegetables to people was something they were very happy with. I was working along, and then I've always been health conscious, wellness conscious. I was a marathon runner when I was a kid. One morning I went out and exercised, came home, started to make breakfast, and had a big heart attack. So this is my second turning point. It was very exciting. I got airlifted twice, first from Isabella Island, where I was living, to San Cristobal Island, where the hospital is in the Galapagos. And then I was stranded there for 4 days. There was not an air ambulance available to take me to the mainland, where I had to go. Eventually they found one, almost 5 days after my heart attack, I finally made it to the hospital in Guayaquil, Ecuador. Public hospital. I will be forever grateful to the Ecuadorian government for providing me with two airlifts, evaluation, and the surgical installation of a stent in one of my coronary arteries. And I paid nothing. They did this for me because I'm a human being who lives in Ecuador. As an American, this is kind of a miracle. All insurance in America is private and costs a lot of money. If this had happened to me in America, uninsured as I was, I don't know what would have happened. Ecuador took marvelous care of me. I had a wonderful surgeon. He did great work. I had an international team. My surgeon was from Argentina. My cardiologist was from Russia. My heart attack was a spectacular experience. Then I came back home to Quake. And that's my second turning point because I couldn't take on the kind of daring rural work that I had originally intended to do in Ecuador. But the great part of this turning point was that I was forced into the internet world. The internet contains lots of opportunities to learn that I had not really paid attention to. Sure, I Googled things and picked up a lot of information, but there are marvelous ways to learn, for example, how to self-employ. I've always been an employee, except for a brief period of house painting when I was in college, when I taught myself. But I've always been an employee. I was a federal employee in the United States. I was a school teacher. In Ecuador, I was employed as an English teacher. In the Galapagos, I was employed as a conservation coordinator. But following the heart attack, for a variety of reasons, it really seemed important to me to do my own thing. I'll be 60 in a couple of months. It was like, yeah, now never.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
So that brought me, that was the second turning point. That brought me here.
So you've had a few challenges along the way. What keeps you putting one foot in front of the other?
What keeps me putting one foot in front of the other? Well, there's always something new. As a teacher, you know, I always told my students that learning was a great thing. Learning is a great thing. I never knew anything about having a business or self-employment really at all. The house painting thing was not great preparation for being self-employed as an adult or in the modern world. I've picked up so much great information just about how to be on the internet, how to become known, how to reach out to people, how to find out what people need. That thing of getting on answers.yahoo.com and trying to help people out and finding that, wow, you know, people really struggle, agonizing struggle to communicate. One of my first best answer winners on answers.yahoo, which I was on as a means of promoting my blog, had to do with a woman who didn't know how to talk to her husband. She had tried. She was just terribly frustrated. She couldn't reach him. And I offered up, you know, the classic system of assertive communication, reassuring her that she had a right to be heard and that there was a way that she could be heard that was problem solving and not accusatory or dividing, that wouldn't drive her husband away, but would actually suggest that they had a problem that needed to be solved and that they could solve it together. And that she could express what she wanted, that's also part of this process. And once that answer came through, I felt tremendously empowered as well. It's like, oh my, I know something that isn't a mad secret. It isn't something that no one has ever heard of. You can Google assertive communication, and you'll get marvelous information. I encourage everyone listening to this to do it. But people don't know. And I have the chance to get the word out because I know, and I know what a difference it could make. So just being in this world of the internet, it's like I used to have a reach of, you know, 25 students in a classroom. Now, potentially, I have a reach, potentially, someday, I have a reach of millions. And it's my goal over the next, well, the rest of my life to keep reaching out and making myself present for people until Everybody knows that they can reach me. Everybody. I want everybody who struggles to communicate, everyone who feels lonely, everyone who wants to be closer to the people they care about, say, Dave, I can talk to Dave and he'll help me do this. That's my goal. That's my thing. What keeps me putting one foot in front of the other? One relationship at a time. One foot in front of the other, one relationship after the other. One person is happier in their marriage. One person has an honest conversation with their child. One person gets to know their best friend in a new way. One person overcomes frustrating, disappointing communications at work. One at a time, one at a time. That's what keeps me going forward. It is.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. That is so cool. It's so exciting too for the future for you, because you've got this great goal to get out there and be heard and get people to contact you and getting that great information about communication, because as you said, it's key to everything that we do, communication. Yeah, I love that. So let's have a change in pace. Let's do the speed round.
Ooh, the speed round, yes.
So what's your favorite book?
My favorite book is Housekeeping by Marilynne Robinson. It's just so well written. She's such a wonderful author. I recommend any of her books. The first one I read was Housekeeping.
All right. A mentor figure that's helped you the most?
My fifth grade teacher, Miss Marguerite Britton. She holds that sainted place in my life. If I was ever anything as a teacher, if I've ever been of help to anybody, she's why.
Oh, cool. What daily ritual works best for you?
Tai Chi. This is new since the heart attack. Tai Chi puts me on track, straightens me out, calms me down, makes me mindful, puts me where I need to go.
Do you have a favorite food?
Favorite food, the Winesap apple.
Ooh, interesting. From your local area there?
It's not from my local area here. It's practically a memory. The Winesap is a type of apple, a breed of apple that was popular, almost 50 years ago. And I ran into one about 35 years ago. And so, yeah, it's just the most memorable thing I've ever eaten.
Oh, wow. That's been good.
It was.
Do you like the country or the city?
Country or city? If I say anything other than Cuenca, my wife will be extremely annoyed. I think I'm going to go with that, but I'll throw in Costa Rica, Santana, Costa Rica, Salitral de Santana, Costa Rica as a backup.
Oh, nice. Yeah. What's your biggest piece of advice to give to others to help them make change in their life?
Biggest piece of advice, I know what it is. There's a great book called Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. I strongly urge everyone to at least give it a look. There's a koan in that book that it's called something like The Treasure. A student seeks a master for enlightenment, and the master says, you know, why are you looking outside? Why are you seeking outside of yourself for enlightenment? And the student says, well, where else would I look? And the master says, look within. Look within. What do I have within? And the master says, the treasure is within. And the last sentence of this koan is something like, reveal the great treasure inside you. If I could share that with anyone, that reveal the great treasure inside you. We all have this. Just trust that it's there and share it.
Okay, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently to tell your former self?
This is a marvelous question. I know that the mature response is, I've lived my life and it all had to be what it was. And to some extent, that's true. To be the person that I am and to get where I am in life, I had to do all the foolish things that I've done. I would say this, particularly to my childhood self. My childhood self was very driven. I'm a graduate of Harvard University, and that is very much because my childhood self was extremely driven that it was Harvard or nothing. It wasn't a great way to start my life, and once I got to Harvard, of course it was not what I thought it would be. It was a fantasy. What I had driven myself for was a fantasy university that did not exist. I would say to my younger self, do a few more things that you enjoy. Don't obsess over what it's going to take to go to Harvard. Think more about what it will take to bring you fulfillment. What's your message? What will make you fulfilled? What will make you the best person you can be? And I would say that, I think, to my 14-year-old self, Sarity. Life is not about going to Harvard. Having gone there, I can tell you, life is not about going to Harvard. Life is about, I come back to this, life is about two things. One, revealing that treasure inside you. And two, revealing it in a way that connects you to other people. And if you do that, then you got a life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, Dave. I love your adventurous spirit and what you've shared with us. So if you'd like to give us the best place to contact you, we can leave it there.
Well, the best place or the simplest place to contact me is on Facebook. I have a Facebook page called Better Than Before. The before is spelled B-E number four. B-E number four. Better Than B-E number four. You can also email me, dave@betterthanbefore.com. The same trick with the B-E number four. I have a blog site. It's a little hard to explain on air. Better Than Before, but this time spelled B-T-R, than letter B number four. But you can find that through the Facebook page or by emailing me. And of course, if you email me, I'll email you right back. I generally email within 24 hours. I'm on this. So yes, I'd love to hear from anyone who's enjoyed this interview.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, we'll definitely add that link to your blog to the description at the beginning if anyone's interested. So thank you very much.
Thanks,
I love having your time here. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. Really grateful.
Igniters, Dave definitely has the spirit of adventure. I love how he talks about revealing the great treasure inside. To have such a goal to keep reaching and being present for people is awesome. Dave shares his thoughts on a Better Than Before blog and Facebook pages. You can write to him directly at dave@betterthanbefore.com. If you want to know more about putting adventure into your life, go to my website, ignitepodcast.com.